I'm Elena Landsberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move, the podcast that kicks old stereotypes to the curb. Come meet these creative, outrageous, authentic, adventurous, irreverent, and powerful disruptors and influencers. Grandmothers, from the living room to the courtroom, making powerful contributions in every walk of life. We know them most intimately as loving caregivers, the older women in our lives with 1,000 stories about their grandchildren and pictures in their purses. In this podcast, you'll come to know even more about our grandmothers. They are galvanized, determined, and are guaranteed to get you thinking. What drives them? What are they up to? What is the potential of grandmother power, and how is it changing the world? Grandmothers are on the move. You don't want to be left behind. Hi, it's Elena. Welcome back to Grandmothers on the Move. Well, February 3rd is World Read Aloud Day, created by the innovative folks at a nonprofit called Lit World. And today, I'm bringing you two interviews to talk about World Read Aloud Day. At first, I thought I was going to weave two interviews together for you, one with Dr. Karen Burke from Scholastic Books, who first got in touch with me about this initiative, and one with the most unusual guest on Grandmothers on the Move, Malcolm Mitchell, a football star, now notably a great lover of reading. More on all of this soon. But as I spoke with Karen and Malcolm, I realized that this should be a two-part episode. They're both such intense, loving, committed advocates for literacy and the love of reading and its critical importance in the lives of children. I fell in love with both of them, their work, their irrepressible passion. I've posted links to Malcolm's foundation, the Share the Magic Foundation, and to the Scholastic website for World Read Aloud Day, which has a myriad of interesting materials available to satisfy, explore, and or launch your love affair with reading aloud and the powerful impact it can and will have on you and the children in your life. I know that many, many grandmothers have been sharing and holding the precious and powerful experience of storytelling and reading aloud with their grandchildren for generations. And I hope some of you will write and share that wisdom with us. I'm sure you'll be touched and inspired by Karen and Malcolm as they share their personal experiences, their thoughtful insights, passionate commitment and compelling reflections, and sweetness about the journey to reading, the love of reading, the power of reading aloud and having a book in one's hands, and children with whom to share the transformative joy of reading. This is part one of my World Reading Aloud Day episode, where you will have the enormous pleasure of hearing from Malcolm Mitchell, a profoundly honest, genuine, and irresistibly thoughtful proponent of the transformative power of literacy, the joy of reading, and bringing it all to children. Before I give you the little formal introduction of Malcolm Mitchell, you might be asking yourself, why am I interviewing Malcolm on the Grandmothers on the Move podcast? He's not a grandmother, he's a man, and he's a young person. And actually, I started off interviewing Malcolm because of World Read Aloud Day and his involvement with the initiative. But as I spoke to Malcolm, I was just deeply touched and inspired by his own journey and his passion, as I know you will be. And then, of course, I learned, and I'm sure Malcolm, you'll forgive me for this, that I believe Malcolm channels quite comfortably his inner grandmother. And it started to make a lot of sense why we were having this conversation and bringing it to you. Malcolm Mitchell is the rookie who helped the New England Patriots win the 51st Super Bowl. What has touched me deeply about Malcolm is how he has used that notoriety in profoundly transformative ways. The founder of an initiative called Read with Malcolm, which introduces book ownership to students and works to improve literacy in schools. Malcolm's Share the Magic Foundation promotes the benefits of reading to kids in underserved communities. He was the New England Patriots Summer Reading Ambassador and encourages summer reading and reading all year round and in life. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and is the author of The Magician's Hat and my very favorite book in the whole wide world. And now, my conversation with Malcolm. Hi, Malcolm. Thank you for taking an interview totally out of the blue from someone who usually talks to grandmothers.
I am looking forward to this. My mom has taught me that being open to all interactions is beneficial for fully living out your life. So my willingness to talk to anyone about anything extends far and wide.
Beautiful. I thought I would start here. I mean, I was reading, Malcolm, about the initiative that's called Read with Malcolm, where you introduce not just reading and literacy, but the whole idea of owning a book, having a book in your hands, and how much your foundation, Share the Magic Foundation, cares about and thinks about the benefits of reading to kids in underserved and under-resourced communities. And I think I read that you were also the New England Patriots Summer Reading Ambassador to encourage reading. But I wonder if I can ask you this. Your own journey, falling in love with reading, understanding the critical importance of it, is something that we often hear around young men in particular who are encouraged to go the route of sports and invest in their physical prowess and perhaps have less investment in them, in their intellectual prowess and expanding of their minds to different experiences and realities through reading. And I wonder if you can connect that to your passion now and what you're doing with children.
Yes, of course. It's important to make reference to my relationship with sport because it played a pivotal role in me eventually wandering into this relationship I have with literacy and encouraging it to students around the country. To the point that you made, I was no different than any other child growing up in my environment. I had an intense focus on my athletic prowess and neglected academic achievements. But it's through a series of events that I learned in order for me to reach my full potential as a person, not just as an athlete, but as a human being, mm-hmm. I needed to develop my skills as it related to critical thinking, decision-making, and emotional intelligence. Now, there are a lot of other things that come along with a literate brain, but I realized that I was lacking in those areas because I had not taken on the skill sets needed to be a literate individual. And that's what created or fostered my devotion for reading, is I wanted to be a better person. And I credit my mom for instilling that in me and my siblings. I just wanted to be a better person. I wanted to be a better human being. I wanted to evolve. I wanted to expand. I wanted to know more. I wanted to be more. And I found out that reading could provide the necessary skills to accomplish those things. And that's how I started my journey to reading, with this belief that it would make me a better me.
Such a beautiful articulation. When you were talking about retiring from sports, you talked about adversity being inevitable. I love the phrase you use. It's about understanding that there's a bright light in the cycle of unforeseen storms. And it's not just literacy, right? It's also about the joy. And it's also about the ability to be part of improving the human condition. And for me, part of what I fell in love with listening to how you talk about this is that it wasn't just the old top-down advantage-disadvantage paradigm where we talk about, you know, helping illiterate kids become literate, but the joy of reading, the importance of having the opportunity to integrate it into who you are. What do you think brought you to that way of thinking about reading and engaging?
Great question. I believe reading to be a form of a superpower. Let me elaborate. Let me share that I did not grow up a reader. I transformed into a reader. So I have this dual perspective of a life without reading and a life with it. I also have this dual perception or perspective of impoverished upbringing with an affluent uprise through my relationship with sport. So I've seen multiple points of view. And as I started my journey into reading, I struggled. And I often phrase it by saying to children, some words were too big, some sentences too long, some books too thick. But once I overcame that challenge, my life became more vibrant, giving me opportunities that I could have never imagined. So that didn't only take place in context of me being a poor African-American boy from Valdosta, Georgia. The same advantages that reading gave me as that person existed as a person who was a NFL football player with a Super Bowl ring. So not only did it enhance my life as an underserved child in that community, but it enhanced my life as a person who had other accomplishments. So reading isn't isolated, or the powers of reading isn't isolated to those who have financial difficulties. The power of reading crosses all communities. It affects all people. It has the ability to enhance the life of every individual who decides to take it on in such a way. I had a meeting a few weeks ago where I was asked about my belief of book ownership, because my foundation focuses on making sure kids in underserved communities have access to books. But I often have to reiterate that that does not mean we do not support children who can afford books. I often have to reiterate that I want to bring the joy of reading to all people, not just those who look like me. And to me, that's important because the process of reading, I equate to empowering our future. And that can be done regardless of whatever position you're at in life.
Yeah. I want to talk about your foundation a little bit and the work you're doing. And I really want to talk about you writing a children's book, because just because you love reading and care about it and see the extraordinary impact that reading can have on children's lives and people's lives doesn't mean that you can automatically be an author. And it's quite hard to write a good kid's book. And I love The Magician's Hat. And it's a wonderful book. And I know that people will pick up and fall in love with it. And I watch videos of you going into schools and giving The Magician's Hat to children. And it didn't feel like this gift from above. The pleasure of the sharing of the book, the looks on their faces when they had their own book in their own hands. I completely understand that it's not just about ownership and acquisition. We're talking about the extreme pleasure of holding a book in your hands and being able to take a book home. But for me, it's not an immediate leap that you would write your own book for children. How did that become part of the story, part of what you're doing, what you're contributing?
You're absolutely right in saying it's not something that just happens. It takes place through a series of events. As I was being transformed by finding a love for reading while I was in college at the University of Georgia, I had this moment of clarity. I was standing in a Barnes & Noble looking through books and grew very emotional and encouraged through my transformation through literacy. And I thought to myself, man, if the kids in my community had a complete understanding of what reading could do for their life, I bet they would live better lives. And with that thought, I said, well, how can I convince them, or what could I do to share this message with my community? I was a person of influence because I had some decent accomplishments on the football field, so people would listen to me without me being very credible. So I said to myself, well, fine. If people want to listen to what I have to say, let me tell them something that will really help them. So I decided to write picture books for children as an attempt to share this beautiful superpower I had run into. And that was my only reason for doing so. I wanted to help change the lives of children through reading.
It makes perfect sense to me. You have such a beautiful humility about you, Malcolm, and using your voice in the way that you have chosen to. Those are deep values that come from somewhere. And from what I've read, your mother does seem to have had an extraordinary influence in grounding you in certain values, how you talk about adversity, how emotionally honest you are about your own epiphanies, your own journey. And I know when you were younger, you lived with your grandmother. And because I like to bring into the light the role that older women play in our lives, in our families, in our communities, in our societies, tell me how older women have played a role in your life in whatever way is most meaningful to you.
I must start with a joke.
Go for it.
My spouse, she often tells me that my alter ego is a grandmother. I am not sure how I should take that. But here's the authentic truth. For all of my childhood, I watched a woman sacrifice in all areas possible to ensure that I had the belief that I could be whatever I wanted to be. That's my mother. I also witnessed my grandmother sacrifice and display a sense of selflessness to ensure that I was encouraged to be whatever I wanted to be. I was a part of a book club who had a selfless approach to allowing a complete stranger of different race, gender, social economic status, and generational differences accept me for who I was and where I was at in life and encourage me to go after what I was hoping to achieve. So my entire life has been built off of other people's selflessness. And I don't display it to the level in which I wish to daily. But what makes to me a grandmother or any older person much different than younger generations is they've had this unique experience throughout life. And they have this robust amount of information that allows them to determine what is most important. And from my understanding of watching and thinking critically about the actions of older people, they realize that other people is what's most important. So how can you help somebody else? How can you encourage somebody to be more than they believe they can be themselves? What level of selflessness do you bring to the scenario that allows people to believe that they can achieve and succeed? That's what I learned from my mother. That's what I learned from my grandmother. And that's what I've learned from any older person I've ever had an opportunity to have a conversation with. And you're just a further example of that. I've never had anyone ask me the questions you're asking me. I've never had anyone take on the patience to make sure that things stay authentic. So thank you for allowing me to continue to believe that selflessness and a person caring about another person is the most powerful thing a person could display. I just want to make sure that I give the proper respect to those who are willing to sacrifice everything for the betterment of another individual, because the lengths in which I've seen people go, example would be my mother, grandmother, to ensure that another person feels even more valuable than themselves, it's just extraordinary. It's when you see that, it brings tears to your eyes, and it also makes you look in the mirror and say, well, what kind of person am I? Mm-hmm. And to make sure that they get the credit that they deserve, I do not want to be placed in that category because I'm not sure that's who I am. I want to be that person and I aim daily to try to get there, but that's an extraordinary person who can do that, right? Mm-hmm. Who can identify a situation and say, it's more important for me to empower this other individual, even if I feel like I'm placing myself at the bottom of the barrel. That's different. You don't run across that every day.
I agree. And I have the privilege of talking to grandmothers and older women all the time. So I live in awe of that too. But I think we're all deeply influenced by these women in our lives. And you've recently become a father, am I right?
Correct.
So I have a question about that, if you don't mind, because that's close to home. So, you know, don't let me step over any personal lines you like to keep private. That's not the point here. But the way that you talk about what you're doing is, I think it's not so much about raising up one person. It's part of the continuum and the continuity of what your grandmother and your mother gave you, the continuity of care, and not in a trite way, in a very serious way. And I wonder, Malcolm, even before you had your own child, you were deeply engaged with reaching out to children and engaging with them in ways that felt so important to you around reading, literacy, having a book, creating your own book for them, with them in mind, so they could see themselves in it. And now your own mother would be a grandmother. Like, now you have this continuity of generations, not just in the work that you're doing, but your own life. Does that have some kind of deeper meaning for you, given what you've been doing and what you care about?
Yes. And if you're okay, I'll dive a bit deeper.
Please.
My family is plagued by missing fathers and role models. And that has its consequences. My mother, being very strong, has several rewards, but missing that male figure, someone who can connect the dots and build a reference point for how to be a father, not having that has its consequences. And I'm always adamant about admitting my flaws, because sometimes I feel people have the opportunity to speak. They try to speak about perfection, and that has no benefit. So I try to speak about what's real and the truth. And the truth is, being a father has been one of the most difficult challenges, because I don't have a reference point and I don't know where to turn for one. Now, what I do have, because of personal experience, is understanding of encouragement, support, being present, and the power of literature. Every day I try to do a decent job of projecting that on my son. His name is Oakley Grand Mitchell. But what being a father has forced me to do is look in the mirror and say, who am I? Because who I am is going to be projected on my son. So whoever I want him to be, I need to ensure that I am being that to the 10th degree with 100% authenticity. And that's created a very intense level of accountability, not to the point where it's destructive, but a very responsible level of accountability that I aim to get towards. As it relates to my passion for spreading the joy and power of reading, it's only heightened my awareness to its importance. I'm aware of all the statistics, positive and negative, that are associated with a child reading or being exposed to books. So I would say Oakley has 50 plus books. We understand the importance of that. He gets read to every night. He hears different forms of vernacular. You try to treat him as a human being because that's what you're trying to turn him into.
Right.
but I give more credit to his mother for her strong foundation and family and allowing me the time to try to catch up and mend some of the gaps from my childhood.
It's kind of amazing, right? When I had my kids, one of the things that surprised me was that anything that you hadn't yourself resolved from your own childhood, they come back to you thousandfold when you have your own child. And so much of what we learn is how you communicate values to your children or teach them good values, whether it's in your faith or whether it's your belief in the role that people should play or how we treat one another, et cetera, et cetera. But even more of it, I believe, is in how we live our own lives. So that's what our children see every day. And one of the things that I love when I watch you in interviews and hearing you now, you know, just living as an example, the complete openness, the way that you do it in service to what you believe in. You know, it's not just what you say when you're standing in front of those kids. It's how you yourself embody the values, the joy in reading, the role it's played in your life.
Here's the misconception. I think for a very long time, the world, me included, was most interested in what it looked like to be at the top of a mountain. But being at the top of the mountain does no one any good if they don't know how you got there. So I find it more beneficial to talk about the journey during the journey than talking about the journey once you've reached your desired outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I am often asked about the Super Bowl in comparison with my literacy journey. And it makes me laugh because in actuality, I don't feel like there should be any comparison. Me winning the Super Bowl did nothing for anybody else. Maybe it encouraged a few kids to want to be a football player, but that was a very self-gratifying accomplishment.
Right.
I understand the platform that it provides, but I also understand the fault at only looking at that. I don't know. I think I was just venting there, but the storm is really beautiful. Like going through the storm, it is punishing.
Mm-hmm.
It is very punishing, but it's beautiful in terms of what it allows another person to believe they can do as well.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I didn't grow up in the United States. I lived there for a while, but I didn't grow up there. But there is a culture of celebrity. There's a culture of the individual. There's a culture of acquisition. You know, what counts as success? What counts as having made it? And the love of reading isn't always associated with the normal metrics of success.
And that baffles me.
Me too.
When I walk into a bookstore or a library, I always use the phrase, I'm walking into the future. Here's why I make that claim. Because anything that is created in our society, wherever you're at in the world, starts from a form of text. And what generates text? The ability to read and be literate. When I make that conclusion, one, I get a bunch of people stare at me saying, he's talking crazy. But, you know, the truth is everything starts from a place of reading. That's it. So with that in mind, how can a person build a better future for themselves if they can't read? How can they build a better future for other people if they don't have the ability to read? It doesn't possess the immediate gratification of a video game or playing sports outside. The benefits of reading take a lot more time to acquire than the world through technology. So I understand why it may not garnish the respect that it deserves on huge platforms. But that does not mean we should not highlight it as being a very important tool to empower someone's future.
Well, and that's really what your foundation does, right? And I know that you're working with Scholastic on World Read Aloud Day, and I know that that comes from a not-for-profit lit world. It seems to me that you're using every conceivable way that you have to engage with reading and the importance of it. As you say, using the voice words that has given you in the service of the importance of reading and the love of it and how it can change your life. My question is this. The whole world has been through, as a result of what's gone on in the U.S. in the last 4 years. A really challenging is the understatement, I think, of the millennium, but it has been an extraordinarily difficult time. We're living through a plague with COVID. You've had everything from insurrections to the rise of really demonic racism and systemic racism and the shining a light on that in the U.S. But also Amanda Gorman and how she wrote and read and delivered this extraordinary poem. And you came into my mind, Malcolm, because I knew I was going to speak to you today. And I thought, here is a perfect example of the extraordinary power of words, unbelievable power of communicating thought, hope, analysis, history, future, a beautiful, poetic, breathtakingly powerful words written by a very young woman in this case brings the wisdom of generations with her. You and Amanda and many others are bringing an extraordinary hope for all of us about what the future can be and should be. And your dedication to the improvement of the human condition using your own journey, your own understanding, and the importance of reading, the love of it, the joy of it, the potential of it. This is what creates hope for a lot of us, that the world will be a better place, if not in my lifetime, then in yours and your son's. Do you feel that as well? Do you feel that moment? Do you feel the potential with a young child in your hands too, and all of the others whose lives you've touched? When you look forward, does that resonate for you?
Great question. I'm excited to answer it. You can blame me for distracting you from the World Read Aloud question. The truth is, I'm not sure I'm suited to be aligned with that conversation. And that could be me being hard on myself or me being honest with myself. I'm not sure I know which one I'm being at the moment. But let me tell you what I have learned. I have learned that being right or wrong in some situations is of little importance. That working to understand each other is what fosters growth. I understand that through reading, we develop the skills to see all sides of the argument and move in a direction that's better for the group. I understand a more literate country is a more unified country. I think we have several concrete examples of people talking about the importance of reading. And Frederick Douglass is by far one of the most powerful representations of what literacy can do for a human being. Because Frederick Douglass associated his liberation from slavery being his ability to read. I get in arguments or debates with people all the time because I take on the mentality that, you know, every piece of the puzzle is necessary to complete it. Some pieces are jaded. Some pieces have rough edges. Some pieces are round. Some pieces are more difficult to find. Some pieces you enjoy looking at. Some pieces you don't. But all that's irrelevant because you need all the pieces to complete the puzzle. So if the most important thing is to move forward and progress, what's the central thing that will allow us to do so? What's the central thing that would allow us to move forward and progress in terms of doing a better job of understanding each other and not working off personal agendas that are developed through caged opinions? If I had a fill in the blank, I would place the word reading. And that's due to all the information that I've been able to consume on my journey and through the personal transformation that took place in my life from being a non-reader to a reader.
That's magnificent. I'm now a devotee. I'm just such an admirer. My goodness. Thank you. I cannot thank you enough for this.
Well, I appreciate you and thank you for having me on.
You are the first man and the first young person to speak on Grandmothers on the Moon.
I love that. I must admit, you're proving Jasmine's, which is my spouse's point, that
You have an inner grandma.
I have an inner grandma.
Thank you. I feel extraordinarily grateful for this time with you, Malcolm.
This was therapeutic for me. I don't get asked those questions that often. I appreciate you.
Me too, you.
Thanks for listening. I'm Ilana Landsberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move. If you want to find out more about me or the podcast, go to grandmothersonthemove.com and come back next week for another episode.